just being able to tell that story now, but also being able to know like what it is like to go through trauma, because if you've never been through it, it just doesn't make sense what your brain does. And so being able to just validate someone else's thoughts, yeah, you're feeling that, that is real, that is not a lie. Because I've had people say, hey, that's not real, those thoughts are not real.
Welcome to Intrinsically Motivated, where we have conversations with experts in the field of addiction, recovery, and those personally affected by it, as we seek to mobilize the church to replace addiction and mental health challenges with flourishing. On today's episode, we'll be talking with Uplift Rideshare Coordinator Caitlin Jarrett. We'll be discussing how her experiences have prepared her for her role at Uplift. I'm Tucker Clements, audio engineer and editor for Uplift Appalachia, and this is Intrinsically Motivated.
When Uplift started, a lot of our vision was to build relationships with people, provide wraparound care, like provide Christian community for people in addiction and recovery through giving them rides, because we thought that transportation was a huge need that people who are in recovery need to kind of get out of that cycle that they've been stuck in, but also it's just an easy way to get to have a conversation with somebody in a meaningful way while meeting an actual tangible need that they have. And so that's been our prayer for now 5 years, that we'd be able to start, you know, giving rides and building relationships with people. And then in the last 6 months, we've partnered with several area organizations, but one in particular is Recovery Resources, which we did a podcast episode on several months ago with Craig Forrester, who runs Recovery Resources. And we're hoping to start giving more and more rides to some of the guys that live in their sober living houses, to job training and things like that. But along with that grant meant that we finally got to hire a transportation coordinator. And Caitlin, you're our transportation coordinator.
Hey.
Hey, aren't you? Hasn't it been exciting?
It's been exciting is a good word. It's a good word to say.
Yeah. So you started January 2nd, right? So
yes.
It was like the very beginning. And when was it that we first found out, oh, by the way, we're going to start giving rides to lots of guys? It was...
Yeah, the second was on like
Thursday or something.
Something like that. Tuesday or Thursday or something like that. And then like 2 days later, we said, I think on a Thursday, hey, we have to get, I think it was 8 or 9 guys to the training certification classes on Monday. Can you help?
And
please?
We said, you don't know anything about our system. Well, we were still working out the details in the system. Like, we knew what the vision was. We didn't know what the day-to-day was going to look like. We didn't necessarily have, I mean, we've been working to, you know, recruit and equip drivers and things like that. But it's like, all of a sudden, it's like, no, we need them now. And by the way, we need you to help us get those.
Yeah.
And so what has your first, you know, because we're wrapping up your first month. What has been kind of your, do we want to lead straight into emotional state? I don't know. What's been your first month's impressions of getting to do this?
Yeah, it's definite. I would say stressful has been the top of the list, but I don't want to I feel like I'm thinking back to like a job I had previous and like the stress is different. Like that was bad stress. This is stressful, but in a good way, because I think when I think about it now, in the end, we're like doing good. And so, yes, stressful has definitely been a thing for me, but I know that like the stress has also made me really rely on Jesus to like come through and do the things. And he has in this month, but it definitely has been stressful.
Yeah. So, I mean, what what has it looked like for you? Like, what have you been doing a lot of?
Okay. Yeah. So, a lot of what I've been doing is cold calling, really. Cold calling churches, people, contacts that we have. We literally have a massive Excel spreadsheet with all these people on it. And I have been calling them kind of pleading, please help, which is what it was like the first week. Hey, we really need your help. Can you help? And so, yeah, I mean, that really has been like this whole month of, we have rides that we have to give and we need people to help us do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, and to immediately get thrown in to this, not knowing that it was going to be quite as urgent as it was. Cause again, we knew it was one of those, it's coming, but we still thought we'd have a little bit more time. But I think the pressure that we ended up getting put in kind of forced us to get to the work. And that I think has been kind of good for us at the same time. It gave us kind of the kick in the pants that we needed to really ramp up.
Yeah, it's time. Let's do it.
Yeah. And I think the getting better at explaining why we're doing what we're doing. And honestly, for me, I don't know how it's been for you, because we've obviously, as we've been recruiting, have also taken people on rides with us or brought people who are volunteers along to kind of see what it looks like. But, you know, like I said, I kind of had this vision for what it could look like 5-6 years ago, giving people rides. And then, you know, because we were doing that in our church plant at the time, which we've talked about, giving rides to, like, half the church was giving rides to the other half of the church. And it was like, this is a good thing. But when for a few years, most of our work has been on just kind of recruiting and training and all of this, to get back in a car with somebody and ride around and talk to them has just really reminded me how cool this opportunity is.
Yeah, for sure.
And just to like get to know some of the, I mean, and some of these guys are hilarious. Like some of the, I don't know about you, I've had some pretty interesting conversations with some of these. Yeah. I'm not going to spill the tea on their lives, because they shared that in the car, which is the whole point of the ride, is like, because they'll talk about whatever they want to, and you learn a whole lot about the way the world works, maybe from people who've lived lives in different corners of the world than you have. And it's, but at the same time, like I drove one day, I don't know, a week or two ago, and I just remember getting back home, getting out of the car and thinking, no, this is still exactly what we should be doing, because this is such a cool opportunity. And just to kind of really get to know some of these guys and see kind of what these relationships can grow into, because we're seeing the same faces week to week, and they're getting to know some of the drivers, and the drivers are getting to know some of their stories, and it's been really cool. I don't know if that's been true for you too.
Yeah, for sure. I think the first week we were like scrambling, and we're like, okay, we need like the ride. That's what is important right now. But I think we've taken a step back and realized, obviously the ride is important, but what we're doing during the ride is really what is the most important. And so, I mean, I think this week specifically has been good for my heart in the guys that I've taken, and just seeing how they interact with each other, even though they don't live in the same houses. They're, for instance, one of them was giving another one who was new some really great advice, and it just was like, this is what it's about. Like having even the 10 minutes that we have in the car together to like encourage one another in their walk, but also like in my walk in life too, it's been encouraging to see.
Yes. I mean, and I know you got probably the same invite that I got. A couple of guys were like, hey, we have this celebration thing that we do at the end of every month. We get together and we have a meal and we just spend time. And it'd be awesome if you guys would come, just so we can get to see again. You can meet some more of the guys. Like they're already asking us to come kind of be a part of some of the stuff. And I just think it's been really encouraging.
For sure.
So, that's what you've been doing for the last month. But I kind of want to know what got you here too, because full disclosure, I've known you for a little while now. We've been going to the same gym for, when did you start going to Burn?
Oh, 22, was it two, maybe?
Like 22, okay,
or
yeah.
21, I mean, I don't know.
I don't remember if I've talked about this on the podcast much. Like, I'm also a personal trainer at a local gym. I started doing that years into going to the gym that my wife found and brought me to, and now I go every day. You go every day. And
that's right.
And we see ourselves made to suffer for 45 minutes together. So it's a real community building experience.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. So I guess we started going to the same camp times around 2 or 3 years ago
probably.
At this point.
Yeah.
And so I've known you at least that long. And then, you know, you ended up working with us in the last month and a half, but there's a lot that's happened in there since then.
So, oh, for sure.
So why was it you were interested in getting into doing some of this transportation coordination sort of thing?
Yeah, well, we can go back to June of last year when I was laid off from a job that I had for 5 years. And in the moment, truly, I was like, dude, what in the world am I going to do? I was making really decent money, and it just felt like the world was falling apart. I don't know if anyone has experienced that before, but that really is what it felt like. And then for 6 months, I literally was like, okay, God, like, what are we doing? And like, it felt for a really long time. I had no idea what he was doing. And then it hit me once the opportunity to come on with Uplift, what what he was doing. And it really was, hey, you've experienced trauma in your life and you're going to now get an opportunity to work and be around people that probably have experienced trauma as well, and how sharing your story probably will benefit and help someone else. And so that really, because I lost a job, I needed a job, and it just happened that the right job fell into my lap.
Yeah.
The right time.
I mean, I remember when you were kind of starting to go through that, I was already like, man, it'd be really cool if we could work something out so she could just come work with us. But the timing wasn't quite right yet. But I mean, it was one of those, once we were getting around to the end of the year, I remember thinking, we're about ready to have this transportation coordinator. And I know you'd been looking lots of different places, trying to find lots of different things.
Yeah.
I mean, to the point that now you were even watching little kids at the gym and stuff like that,
right.
which I can imagine is equally or probably even more stressful than driving around people who are in recovery.
For sure.
But you know, it was like, I wonder if this could work out. And we kind of prayed about it. It was like, what if we just sat down and talked? And I think it was like a half an hour conversation.
Yeah.
We're like, no, you should just do this.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of been, you know.
And I think like just the 6 months of waiting, again, I didn't know what was happening. And I know, like, for me, I question God all the time when, like, trials come. Okay, like, why are these happening to me? It doesn't make sense. I'm a good person, right? I feel like we probably all feel that way. But, like, now looking back in that time, it was like, okay, you really just need to take time and, like, really, like, do a dig deep down inside of, like, what really matters to you. And, like, then I'm going to lead you to that.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, you talked about being able to share some of your story. Do you care if we talk a little bit about
it? We can talk about it.
So I know you said you've also experienced trauma and this sort of thing as well. Is that like a recent thing, or was that something from a long time ago, earlier in life? Like what?
Yeah. So when I was probably, gosh, it probably started before I even can really remember, but probably from like the ages of like 5 to 10, I was sexually abused. And so, I hid that fact and secret from my family until November of 2023. They didn't know. And so that was probably almost 20 years of me hiding that secret from them. Now, I'd told some people before that. I would say in probably October or November of 2023, I just really, that whole entire year previous, had really been going through some really deep depression and anxiety. And I just couldn't pinpoint like where is this coming from and why am I having it? And I've dealt with depression and anxiety probably my entire life, but can remember really being diagnosed with it in college. And anytime I would have those really deep depressive states, what would always come back to me were these memories of the sexual abuse happening. And so then I would get into this spiral of, okay, well, it was my fault that this happened. And then I felt unworthy. Like there was so many things, unloved, like couldn't be loved, just basically like pointless for me to even like be on the earth truly. And so it just got really, I had an episode in college where it got really bad, and then it got really bad again. And I think the reason this time was different is because I had a group of people really rally around me. And even when I was like, I don't want to hear about Jesus, I don't want to hear your encouragement, it didn't matter. They still came and was like, let's really figure out what's going on. And so I would say October, I really was like, okay, I think the reason that I'm having this depressive state and like cannot get out of it is because my family doesn't know a secret that really has defined me as a human. And so will telling them help? I don't know, but it really feels like the thing that needs to happen. And so in November of 2023, I set my parents down with that group of people that had really helped me, pushed me to really know my worth and know that, you know, I'm loved. That was probably like the biggest thing for me, feeling unloved, and that not only am I loved by them, but like God loves me too. And I had a really, really hard time with that concept of God really loving me. It didn't make sense. How could a God who is so great and awesome, like let this happen to a little kid? it didn't make sense at all. And so really trying to figure out like, why did this happen? And I don't know that I'm really ever going to know, but really what did it for me is that like the enemy is real. He is so real. And that like, God didn't let this happen. Like the enemy, like this happened because of the enemy.
Right.
And so again, after a lot of processing through the things, I told my parents in November, and truly the weight that was lifted off of me is, I can't even explain what that felt like. And there was a lot of guilt that came with that too, because I could see in my mom's face how upset she was, not at me, but that the fact that it had happened and that she felt that she could have done something. And I think that like pausing for a second and like whoever's listening to this, if you or someone you know really close has gone through some kind of traumatic event like this, sexual abuse, it is not your fault. And that was a big thing that I had to overcome. It was not my fault that this happened to me. So like, listen, it is not your fault that this has happened to you. It's okay that it happened, but like, let's get through this, and realize that it isn't your fault. And so I told my family and it was great. Like, I think another thing that I was worried about too was, are they going to be mad at me, or are they going to think that I'm lying about this thing that happened so long ago because I was a little kid and, well, like, you know, kids lie, but
right. It
wasn't. This was true. This really did happen. And so like the support that I even got from my family was so great too. And just like made a situation that was really bad become so beautiful. And the fact that I got really close to people who are now some of my best friends, but also got closer to my family as well. And so, yeah, just being able to tell that story now, but also being able to know like what it is like to go through trauma, because if you've never been through it, it just doesn't make sense what your brain does. And right. So being able to like just validate someone else's thoughts. Yeah. You're feeling that. That is real. That is not a lie. Cause I've had people say, hey, that's not real. Those thoughts are not real.
Yeah. That's one of the things that we talk about when we do trauma-informed church training. With organizations or individuals or churches, one of the things that I always end up having to come back to, because one of the final points, I'm just going to spoil part of the end of the training. One of the points that we always come back to is, if you're going to be really good at being trauma-informed in the way that you work with people, is you have to know yourself too. And for some people, that's going to be knowing the trauma that they have experienced and being able to work through and process that. But for me, I didn't grow up having experienced really any trauma. You know, we talk about adverse childhood experience scores and all these things. There's a lot to it, but I had a score of zero, you know, and it's like, that feels unfair when you're talking to somebody that has experienced it. But at the same time, it means that I have to not assume that everybody's experience is the same as me. So also for people that are listening to this, like, I don't even know how to begin to process that. It's not necessarily that we have to understand the details of everything to be, you know, kind and supportive and loving of people that have been through those things. And I think a lot of it's just recognizing that about yourself. Like, I have to know there's some things that I'm not going to understand the way that somebody who has had a different life experience than me has had. And I think that's really important. So I want to ask you a couple questions about some of that. Because you talked about having not shared it with people for a long time. And you also talked about shame, and you talked about guilt, and you talked about these things that you were feeling. Was it one thing in particular, or was it just you tried to block that experience out from your life? What was it that you think kept you from really feeling like it was something you could share?
Yeah. Well, I think that it, like, trying to think back to like the first memory that I have of like the abuse happening, and what did I feel in that moment? And I think that as a young kid, having that happen by someone that you trust, an adult, makes you think that it's okay. And there's a part of, I think that there was a part of me that realized like, okay, this probably really isn't okay. But then you've endured it for so long that you're like, okay, well, it is okay. And then once it stopped happening, because it stopped happening because that person was no longer in my life, it's like my brain told me that it wasn't real. And so for a really long time, I just blocked that out of my memory.
There was nothing to tell because it wasn't a real thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then I remember actually the first time I told someone was in 2018, I think, a really good friend of mine, and told her, and like, it still didn't feel real. I knew it was real, but it still didn't feel real in that moment after telling her, like, this is something that I'm really struggling with keeping a secret. Yeah. So just the feeling of it not being real.
So what in that moment led you to feel comfortable telling that friend?
Yeah. So, the church that I was attending at the time, I don't even remember what the pastor was saying, but whatever it was, I think he said something on the lines of like, how can you really have a relationship with Jesus if like your close people don't really know all the things about you? Something like that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so then I literally like, it just like wrecked me, even though it doesn't feel like those words should wreck you. Cause I feel like I've probably heard those types of words a million times and been like, yeah, whatever. But in that moment it just wrecked me. And I sat in my car after service and they came out and like just looked at me and like knew something was wrong. And so I was like, yeah, I just need to say this to someone who I trust.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things when we talk about what it really looks like to wrap around somebody and support them really does. And we use Acts chapter 2 a lot, which is, and all the disciples were together and they had all things in common. And like, it kind of I tend to link that back with like that description of Adam and Eve in the garden. And where it says they were naked and they were unashamed. And it's like, you know, they had nothing to hide from each other. And that was perfection. And as soon as sin comes in, the first thing that they did was they covered themselves up and they went and hid from God. And so it's like the ideal state that we're supposed to be in is this state where we really can have, we know that God knows everything about us, but we try to pretend like he doesn't.
Right.
And we have people in our lives that can't just know everything about us unless we're sharing those sorts of things. But having those kind of people in your life that you can have know everything, that was probably a really, I can't imagine what that felt like to kind of finally say that out loud. But I would imagine similar to when you shared that with your family,
yeah,
that it was like, okay, there's somebody else, because that's just a weight that you'd been bearing by yourself,
yeah,
for all those years. And now somebody else is shouldering some of that with you. And I can't imagine that it's not going to feel anything better than just a little bit of relief.
For sure. There was probably a very small amount of relief. And then like a lot of shame and guilt came along with that. And again, a lot of the thoughts that I had were like, how in the world did you like let this happen to yourself, even as a small kid who has literally really no control over themselves at that point?
Right.
Like those types of things started flooding back through my mind. And then I was just a hot mess for like the longest time. And not all the people knew that I was a hot mess. I hide it really well when I'm a hot mess. But yeah, it definitely took me a really long time, a lot of counseling sessions and like people rallying around me to realize. And again, I mean, that was in 2018. We're talking like 2023 came around and then I really like was able to like function slightly normal and not like have that weighing on myself.
So obviously this was, you kind of had this realization because you heard a pastor talking and then you had somebody who saw you in that place from your church. So did you grow up in church your whole life?
Yes. My parents got married in the church that I grew up in, a Baptist church. And I've gone to church really my entire life. But there was a time when I was probably like 16 that some things in the church happened and we decided to leave. And we probably didn't go to church. Maybe I may have been a little bit older. It's possible, closer to college, that we didn't go to church and then we started going. So that has been a, like, things happen, we don't go, and then we go again.
Right.
Yeah, but I've been going my entire life.
Yeah, I'm just curious, because it's like, you obviously seem to understand how to find that community within the church, and I was just wondering how that was instilled in you at an early age,
or yeah,
or were you just kind of attending for attending's sake?
Yeah, I don't think that the community aspect came until we left the church that I grew up in. And it's like, no dig at them, but...
we don't have to say names.
It's yeah, fine. I won't say names. No dig at them, but it was like when I went to a different church, the atmosphere was just a lot different. And I just felt the spirit more. And so then like community was a really big thing for them. And it wasn't just like community within the church. It was like, we're going to go outside. And like, I don't think I've ever even told you this. I was an intern and we would go and like ring doorbells for him. And it was like the wildest thing. I don't even know why I did this, but I mean, great. We would ring doorbells and ask people how we could pray for them. We would go like down to like the government housing here and do that. We took a mission trip to New Orleans and we did it there to like people I had no idea who they were. But just ask them, hey, how can we pray for you? And so like that really probably started like the whole community aspect. Yeah.
So where on this introvert to extrovert spectrum do you actually exist? Because this doesn't seem like something now that I would see you going.
I know,
to
isn't it wild?
It's crazy.
I'm so introverted, but then I feel like when I get behind a cause and I'm really passionate about it, then my extrovertedness is going to come out.
You're going to do it despite what you would naturally want to do?
Yeah, for sure. Because I was telling my mom, right when I first started, she had called me and she said, oh, what are you doing? And I was like, well, I'm making cold calls to churches. And she's like, are you kidding me right now?
This doesn't seem like something you would do.
Like, you can't even, like, sometimes I have, like, such bad social anxiety that, like, she, like, took clothes for me to, like... go get sold. And yeah. I was like, can you do that? Because I have such social anxiety, but I don't care to call people because I'm like really passionate
this
about
needs to
what
happen
we're doing.
And I want
to
see it happen. Right. But yeah, I it's like, cause I was asking you, Ori, on this introvert extrovert thing, cause I am obviously a natural extrovert, but when it comes to cold calling somebody or talking to somebody one-on-one,
yeah.
I get way more introverted. So yeah. Like we talk, like I train at the gym and like, I am totally fine standing up in front of everybody with a microphone.
Yeah, you are.
Telling them the things to do and then making fun of them when they get tired and these sort, you know, it's a very encouraging environment. I don't make fun. I laugh at the misery that I get to put people through sometimes.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if I have a new member or a new person come in and I don't know their name and I have to walk over and introduce myself to it, that is like my least favorite thing to have to do. I mean, I'll do it. And then eventually once I know you, we're going to be great friends, but yeah, it's interesting how different parts of our personality come out in different ways. So you're obviously still really involved in your current church.
Yes.
And you have really good community there, I would imagine.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm just curious, because the thing that I keep coming back to when I hear you, and I think one of the reasons that I do think we know each other so well now is because the gym that we go to is all about the community aspect. Like, sure, we're going to work out, but I think the reason that most of us keep coming back is because of the people that were around
while
we're there, even if the trainers like me are sometimes kind of a pain and we wish that we would go away, that kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure.
But like what I keep hearing is like the reason you were able to kind of bring up all the stuff, open up to your family was because you had the right people in your life.
Yeah. And truthfully, it has taken a while to get that right, those right people. And I mean, I've been through multiple churches and then like this one has really stuck. Like the people are great. And I'm not like downing those other churches or those other people, but I think that like we as humans want it to be done and like find the thing really quickly. And it just doesn't happen that way. And so
you looked for a job for 6 months,
right? I looked for a job for 6 months and didn't find anything. And it was like the most discouraging thing ever. And I know it can be really discouraging when you're trying to find community and it's just not happening, but like keep doing it because it like, once you find the community, it's so great. And these literally are like some of my best friends, and Noah will have them in my life for forever, even if we do split ways. But they, along with Jesus, but they are the ones that really pushed me to like get through the thing and really just like be better, like mentally, physically, emotionally, like be better.
To like to know that you have those people that are still going to be with you. Because again, like I can't imagine the kinds of things that were going on in your head.
Yeah.
When you're thinking about talking about all of this, the things that you're remembering or not remembering or yeah. come back to you at different points and all of that. But to have that kind of stability of knowing
yeah, it was
that you
like,
have people.
Yeah. It was like the biggest like judge-free zone
right.
that I've ever had. And I think that like that's really the biggest thing is that I've had people in life before judge what I was feeling or going through or felt like they were judging and just not be there when I thought that they would. And this was like totally different.
Right.
And it felt great.
Yeah. And I bring that all back up because what we're trying to do at Uplift and what we're trying to do with these rides and that sort of thing really is kind of being captured by that idea. Because if we are the ones who've been told by God to have this kind of community with one another, we understand what the secret sauce is to all this. I mean, you've obviously seen how it's played out in your life, having the church around you to support you and now being able to kind of feel reconnected in a way. I'm not saying that you were disconnected from your family, but I'm sure that after all that, you felt like there's not this thing between us anymore. All of
right.
these, right? Like the better we can be at practicing that within the church, as hard as that can be sometimes, you know, we always, when we had our church plant here, we always talked about we're in each other's business. That's the idea. It's like we know what's going on in each other's lives because we want to be there to A, call somebody back if they feel like they're getting called into wandering off or if they start disappearing. Or, you know, we have people that are in addiction and recovery that we were ministering to. And it's like if somebody disappears, they might be in like actual danger and we need to try to track them, you know. But like if we understand that secret sauce and we can practice that with each other really well and then take that same mentality and practice it really well with these people that we can get just by giving them a ride, build this relationship with, or just by, you know, being present in their lives in some sort of way. Cause it's not always going to be this rideshare opportunity.
Yeah.
Like this grant is for 3 years. We're going to be doing this for a while and you're going to be really busy for a long time, hopefully. But we want it to go beyond just, hey, we're going to get these 6, 8, 9, 12, however many guys from Kingsport to Johnson City and these guys in Johnson City to their training in Johnson City, all of that. We want it to be like, oh, and now I know this guy that I've picked up 6, 8 times. I know him really well and I'm going to go pick him up and I'm going to take him to dinner at my church, or I'm just going to go meet him and we're going to go grab lunch and I want to hear more about his story because he's a fascinating guy. And it's like the more we who understand how powerful that can be, the more we can practice that with these folks that are in recovery. This is why I honestly think we can actually not, we may not see the final solution of addiction. We may not finally see no one's addicted anymore. But I think if the church can just kind of continue to do this, because I'm seeing it in little pockets. Like just hearing you talk about some of the guys you've been riding around, some of the guys I talked to, hearing some of the folks that from my church that went and rode with me, you know, the last couple of weeks, just to kind of do it. They're like, that guy was a hoot. Yes, yes, he was. And we can do this all the time. We can really get to know these guys. Just hearing those little moments where it's like, we're building connection with these guys. I can't imagine that God's not going to do something really amazing
for
with
sure.
these kinds of opportunities.
And I think we're already seeing it happen. Like, he's already moving. And the fact that, like, we did get people to help on such short notice, but then, like, he's also, when I'm driving, he's in the truck. Like, I can feel him. And, like, maybe they're not talking about Jesus, but you can just, like, feel the presence of, like, them connecting and then connecting with them. And I think that really is what it's all about at this point, right? Like, let's make connections to guys that maybe even have a bad thought or like have had a bad rep in church, but like, let us be the hands and feet of Jesus where we're not like being like, oh man, he did that. Like, I can't believe he did that
right.
or whatever.
We really are trying to, like I said, it's a good ministry opportunity for us to like show them who Jesus is, but also just to kind of maybe repair the reputation of the church with some of these guys. And I think that works for the organizations that we're partnering
yeah.
with too, because some of the people that we're partnering with have probably had some church hurt and some bad experiences. And so we're trying to demystify how loving the church actually can be, because we haven't always done a perfect job of trying to build relationships with folks and show them the love of Jesus the way that we think we can.
Yeah.
So looking forward, what are the things that you're most hoping to see happen over whatever period? I mean, obviously, like, hey, we're doing rides again next week.
Yeah.
And then the week after, and then the week, like, we're going to be hopefully doing this. It's going to be an ongoing thing for a long time now. So yeah. Obviously it was like, we want people to give rides. What are the things that you're most hoping to see happen over the next couple of months for you?
I think that more volunteers obviously is like the biggest thing, but I don't want people to do it just because like we're asking. Like, I want them to do it because they feel the call to do it.
You want to catch the vision too.
Yeah. Like, I want you to realize what we're doing. Again, like, not that the ride isn't important, but what we're really trying to like create out of the ride, like fostering relationships with literally some of the sweetest guys that I've ever met. They really are.
Which is great, because you hop in the car and you're like, wow, these guys seem a little rough around the edge. I had one guy in the car with me last week, and I don't know if it was just because he'd been in his class all day and they'd been all serious and take, but he just decided he was just going to start telling all these jokes. Like, this one's a clean one. And he tells him, and I'm sitting here thinking, man, that is absolutely not a clean one. But, you know, he's just like, he just wants to be around folks and stuff like
that. For
sure. I keep describing these guys. So tell me about these guys. I'm like, well, they're guys who are in recovery housing, probably coming out of some sort of incarceration.
Yeah.
So it's like, you hear all that and you're like, wow, that sounds really intimidating. And then it's like, absolutely not. Like,
no.
These guys are, it's like, I mean, I keep saying, it's a completely harmless experience.
Like, it really is. Like, they are wanting to do better. And so why
and
not
they're wanting
help
each other
them?
To do better too.
Yeah, which is like probably the most, like, that was one of the most encouraging things for me this week, was like seeing one of them encourage one of the newer guys, like, you can do this. And like, this is how I did it, which again, like, we're going to tell our story of like, I've been through that. And like, I think that is probably like one of the most encouraging things, is hearing, hey, I went through that thing, but I overcame that thing, and this is how I did it.
Yeah.
And so like hearing that, but like, why not, while they're encouraging one another, why not like us encourage them, like with the love of Jesus too?
Yeah. Well, the cool thing is just like, they have community, and we don't want, and we want people that are going to give rides to it to know we're going to support our drivers as well. Like, we don't want to just, we're not just trying to throw people out there with people
right.
They have no idea and just say, hey, here's a Google Maps route, have fun and tell us how you think it goes. But rather, you know, we didn't know what training people to do rides would look like until a month ago.
Yeah.
And now what it looks like is, it's also community building. It's, hey, come hop in the car with me.
Yeah.
And ride around with me. Let me talk to you about what this looks like. And then you're going to ride with me while we give these guys a ride. And then afterwards, I'm going to talk to you about it. And then you're going to give some guys some rides, and you're going to understand it. But also, if you have questions, we're still here. If you don't understand why we're doing it, we want to train in that. If you don't understand what addiction really looks like, the reason that Uplift has all of these trainings is not just so we can do this training and have an opportunity to speak. Like, we like getting to do that. But it's more because it answers all these questions and kind of, again, I use this phrase, I've been using this word a lot lately. It demystifies the work that we're trying to do. It's like, I just want you to understand what's going on in people's brains and their bodies. And I want you to understand why things are happening the way that they are. I want you to see people a little bit differently. And then I'll walk you through what the mechanics of giving somebody a ride. And you may be like, what kind of conversation am I supposed to have? How am I supposed to talk to them? We can talk about that. But for a lot of the times, it's honestly just being there and talk. We were talking about NFL playoffs all the way back to Kingsport last week. And I made a couple of guys mad, because I was like, yeah, I'm a big Tom Brady guy. And they're like, oh, you're terrible, I don't want to talk to you anymore. And it's like, well, you're stuck with me because I'm your ride. You know, these kinds of things. It's like just normal conversations with guys. It's not that I'm avoiding having spiritual conversations. I'm trying to build a relationship with them. And some of the time they're like, now, why are you guys doing this? Oh, well, we're trying to get the church to help get you guys from one place to another. And if we build a relationship with you along the way, and somebody's like, oh, well, this guy who lives next to me, he goes to this church down here. Oh, have you ever gone with him? No, he's asked me, but I haven't gone. Oh, well, Maybe you should think about, you know, like there's going to be all kinds of opportunities to get to the church building part of it. And I would hope that as we get going, some of these churches that are hopefully closer to the houses.
Yeah.
That's what all those that you're cold calling.
Yeah.
Right. Are going to end up, you know, saying, oh, these guys are right around the corner. We'll take care of them. And then we'll also be there for them. And hopefully we can slowly help them build Christian community and all of these things along the way as well.
Yeah. I feel like there's no need to be scared of like, what questions do we ask? Because like, they're just guys, like humans. And so like, we literally just have like what a normal conversation looks like, and there's nothing weird about that. And then if they open up, great. I mean, then we can see where that goes,
and
right?
You'll hear some wild stories. I heard a couple of wild ones last week, but at the same time, it was just like, I asked him, I said, can I ask you about this thing that you just said? And he said, sure. And he gave me this whole story. And I'm like, that is one of the wildest experiences that I can imagine you of having had.
And I think like, in order to like heal, like you have to talk about what you went through. And I think that has like, truly, if we would have done this like a year ago, I would have been sobbing the whole time. But like now it's not hard to talk about because I've talked about it and there's been healing when talking about it too.
Right.
And so like hearing those types of conversations with those guys of like, this is what I went through, is probably really healing for them to talk about.
Even if they don't know that's what's happening.
Yeah.
And that's the cool thing is like, we're just kind of giving them some community, giving them some space to be people.
Yeah.
We have an ulterior motive. We want them to know Jesus. We want them to feel better. We want them to stay in recovery. We want them to be successful. You know, we talk about replacing addiction and mental health challenges with we want flourishing. That's the thing. And to me, flourishing is kind of related to this idea, like when Jesus says, I want them to have life abundantly, right? I want them to have more than just what it is. We don't just want people to be alive. We want them to actually get to live. And I think this is an amazing way. And like I said, I've been super encouraged to get back in a car and ride around with a bunch of guys. It's like, it's an hour loop from here to Kingsport and back. Sure. And is that inconvenient some days? Maybe. Do I feel really encouraged whenever I get out of the car and I've had like a fun conversation with some of these guys? Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, just kind of going back and talk about what Uplift has been like over the last few years. It's like, it kind of comes in waves. There was kind of this is a good idea. Can we get it all organized? Yes, we got it organized. Let's do something. Well, it's kind of slow going. We don't really have the funding to hire enough people to get the work done. Oh, God finally gave us enough funding. And then there's this big leap forward. And I feel like just in the last month, we've made the next big leap forward. And I've just been like super encouraged to have you here working on all this stuff because I asked you a few weeks ago, you know, how are you liking this? And do you remember what you said?
Yeah, I said, I don't want to say it, but I really do love it. And it was more of like, I don't want to jinx this because I've been in like work environments where it's just like, I liked it and then it was horrible. But I really do love it. And it like, I just feel really purposeful with like what we're doing. And like, how can you not like something that gives you purpose?
Right. And it's like, and now it's like, I see the next big leap coming forward because
for sure.
We immediately were like, let's start praying really hard that churches will come. And for the first week, too, it was really quiet on some of the responses. And it was really easy to get really discouraged.
For sure.
But even in the last week, we've had a couple different churches respond. A couple folks from my church said, hey, we want to come. It's like, it's starting to happen.
Yeah.
And any little glimmer of God's doing this has been just the most amazing thing to see it taking shape. And I think it's only going to continue to happen more and get better as we go. Because every single person that I've talked to afterwards been like, I see what you're trying to do. And it's not just, I see what you're trying to do. Hope it goes well for you. It's, I see what you're trying to do. I could do this.
Right. And it makes sense.
And things are working. And so, like I said, I don't want to just, I'm not just, this whole podcast isn't just here to butter you up and say, you're doing such a good job, but I've been so happy to have you doing this.
Oh, well, thanks.
Yeah, I know, right? It's like, wow, a nice thing from Tanner. who saw that coming? It's like, and I feel bad for you because you just can't escape me because it's like, we see each other at the church, the gym. And then you're like, well, I can get rid of him. Nope. Now I just work with him and yeah. I'm stuck with him and stuff.
Got to go to another meeting with him.
Another meeting, another podcast recording, another, you know, whatever it may be. But at the same time, I think just because you're coming from a place where you understand the need for community.
Yeah.
And you're seeing the benefits of having people in your life that understand what's going on. You got that from your church. You've got that. We've got that at our gym community.
Yeah.
We've got that within this organization. And now we're starting to get that with these guys that we're serving. I just think it's going to be, I'm just so excited to see what God continues to do and does next. So, before we go, what is it that you're, if somebody's listening to this, what's the best way for them to really figure out what they can do to get involved in this next?
Yeah, for sure. Well, obviously contact us. Yeah. That's the first step is contact Uplift. Is there like a link or something on our website? I don't even know.
You're so new. I haven't even told you. Yeah. So you our main email director at UpliftAppalachia.org. You can always get in touch with us there. You can reach out through us, you know, Uplift Appalachia on Instagram. We're on Facebook, same thing, Uplift Appalachia, all of those places. Hopefully I would also say just don't just call us and say, how can we get involved? But say to people in your church too, because it's going to take community for you too, to sustain it. You don't want to do this in isolation. You want people around you that are building you up as you're doing this work. So,
yeah,
you know, like, talk to your small group, talk to your Sunday school class, whatever it is. Y'all work on it together. Like, come together. Yeah. If you're like, we need training, we'll train you. But like,
yeah,
in the end, I'm ultimately going to just say, here's Caitlin's information. She's going to do all the work that I'm not capable of doing because I am not the organized one at this. But Caitlin is going to be the one who is reaching out to you and making that happen.
Yeah. Reach out to us. We'll get back in contact with you. And then I think too, if you're like listening and you're like, man, I can't do that, but I have a feeling that like Joe, whoever sits like three seats down from me, he would be a really good guy, or like Sarah, who sits up front, would be really great at this. Like, go tell them about it. Like, give them the podcast information so they can then hear. And like, just because you can't do it doesn't mean that you don't know someone else who would be able to.
This has been a podcast powered by Uplift Appalachia. To learn more, you can find us at upliftappalachia.org.